All right, chapter 21. The word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah from... I didn't even read that. The word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, when King Zedekiah sent unto him Pashur the son of Malchiah, and Zephaniah the son of Maaseiah, the priest, saying, Inquire, I pray thee, of the Lord for us. And for Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, maketh war against us. If so be that the Lord will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, that he may go up from us, or that Nebuchadnezzar would just leave, is the thought that we have. So he sent two men to him. Now this Pashur is not the same one as we read before. They have the same name, but notice they have different fathers. It's probably a name that was used quite often. We read this man again in the 38th chapter, and the timing that we have in this, and I repeat again, this is not a chronological order, but it's in the 24th chapter of 2 Kings. We read of the siege that was taken, and maybe we ought to read that. Let's see Nancy's turn to read in it. Look up 2 Kings 24:17, I believe it is the siege. 24:17. I want two verses there. And then 25:2, I think it is, the second. So now we know who we're talking about. And this was, this man had no right to the throne. He was not God's chosen man. He was Nebuchadnezzar's man for the throne. And this was his the first time they came down. Now, go into the 25:1, verse 2, I think I want. Go ahead. You read both of them. Yeah, read both of them while you're there. All right. So now give us the first date there. When did he set up the fort? What year of Zedekiah's reign? 9th year until the 11th year. See? So we have 2 years there. And I feel, and I want to put it that way because you can differ with me if you want to, but I feel that it was during this 2 year time that he contacted Jeremiah. And notice what he said. He sent these two men, and they were priests, and they asked for prayer. Now, he must have honored Jeremiah, or he was at his wit's end, and there was no place else to turn. You know, it's amazing how people come to you for prayer when they won't speak to you at any other time. They don't have anything to do with you, but let them get really in trouble. It gets surrounded by trouble on every side. Then they'll call you on the phone and ask for prayer. But he sent these men to inquire, and he says, here's Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. Notice this is spelled a little different, but it's the same person. King of Babylon to make war against us. Now, here's his question. If so be that the Lord will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, that he might go up from us, or Nebuchadnezzar would leave. But you know, at this time, it was too late to ask for God to do his wondrous works. God had already made the statement and made the proclamation that this was it, and that he was going to take them into captivity. And so the principle, I think, that we see here for us today is seek God first and avail the loss. If they had to seek God, God would have done the same thing for them, as he did for Hezekiah when Sennacherib came down. And remember the story of Hezekiah turned wholly to the Lord, and God just destroyed Sennacherib's army, didn't he? And he'll do the same thing if we just turn to him first. We're not waiting until everything else. His wondrous works were not for Zedekiah. But here's what God did say, verse 4. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands. In other words, all your weapons are going to be worthless. I'm going to turn them around. I'm going to turn them back, and they're not going to be of any value to you. This is what they were depending upon. Wherewith you fight against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans, which besiege you without the walls, and I will assemble them into the midst of the city. I'm going to gather them all together. Notice again the I wills. And then in verse 5 he said, I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and a strong arm, even in anger and fury and with great wrath. I am going to fight against you. Nebuchadnezzar, the Chaldeans, were only tools for God to use in this fight. It was his working. He said, I'm gonna fight against you with outstretched hand and a strong arm. In the 6th chapter of Exodus, we'll find that this is exactly what he did to Egypt when he brought them out of Egypt. He brought them out with a strong arm and an outstanding hand. So God was able to do it, but here he was going to use the same thing against them as he did against the other unbelievers, against the world. And he said, I will smite the inhabitants of the city, both man and beast, and they shall die of great pestilence. And afterward, saith the Lord, I will deliver Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and his servants, and the people, and such as are left in this city, from pestilence, from the sword, and from famine, unto the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and unto the hand of their enemy, and to the hand of those that seek their life, and he shall smite them with the edge of the sword, and they shall not spare them, neither have pity or mercy. Now this is ordained of God, and this all came to pass. There was threefold operation here. There was pestilence, famine, and sword. These three definite things that would be brought against them. We find this used in many times against the suffering on that fact. Pestilence, sword, and famine. In Matthew 24, we won't turn to that, but Jesus used these as a sign of the end time. Then, let's see, Greg is the next one to read. You read last, didn't you? Ezekiel 5, verse 12. We read in there that two-thirds of people will die of this. This is three-thirds, isn't it? Third part with pestilence and famine. Third part with the sword. And the other third part is going to get scattered. Now, this had a partial fulfillment, and I will stay there in Ezekiel, another verse I want you to read them in. This had a partial fulfillment, and yet it's going to have a much greater fulfillment. In the 17th verse, read that for me. Now, chapter 6, verse 12. No one will escape from the suffering, and the just will suffer with the unjust as well. God never told us what we wouldn't suffer. Then in chapter 7, verse 15. So we have these three, and yet they're yet to come. And we read them in the book of Revelation, too. I'm not going to turn to all of that. Verse 8. Unto this people thou shalt say, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will set before you a way of life and a way of death. It seemed like they had a choice now. Which way they really wanted to go. Jack, look up Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. And we'll see that this similar choice was given there for them to go the right way. And it's best to choose God's way, isn't it? You know, this is not predestination. This is simply a choice. Which way do we want in life? Do we want to go the way of life, or do we want to go the way of death? You have that, Deuteronomy 30? I suppose everybody in the class has chosen life rather than death. But many of God's people are choosing the way of death simply because they don't want to walk with the Lord. A premature cutting off. They could have lived longer and happier. I'm not saying they won't have tribulation, but they could have had a one more wonderful life. He that abideth, verse 9, in the city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by pestilence, but he that goeth out, see, now this is the choice, have an unconditional surrender. Just simply go out and surrender to the enemy. He that goeth out and falleth to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live, and his life shall be unto you for a prey. And he would simply take them into captivity. When the 70 years is over, they would be released, and this would be God's punishment. But they didn't want to do that, and they refused to believe Jeremiah's word. The same thing is repeated in chapter 38, verse 2, I believe it is. And then also in 38, 17, and 18. The same thing is repeated. But even so, only their life would be saved. That's the only thing he promised them was their life. They probably still lose all their possessions. And most people think more of their possessions, a lot of people do, than their life. But there is an escape. Same way with us, there is a way of out. We may lose all of our possessions. There's a way out, isn't it? 1 Corinthians 10:13, there are no temptations taking you, no trouble, heartache, problem, situation taking you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful. He will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also make way to escape that you may be able to bear it. And so God would carry them through if they would just do the will of God. That's all he had. Verse 11, or verse 10, we didn't read that. And I have set my face against this city for evil and not for good, saith the Lord. And it shall be given into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. And the reason it's going to be burned with fire is God knew that they would not believe his word. And it had to be destroyed. But regardless of what man does, God said, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to use the king of Babylon to do it. Verse 11, and touch the house of the king of Judah. Say, I hear the word of the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord. O house of David, or the descendants of David, thus saith the Lord, execute judgment in the morning, and deliver him that is spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, lest my fury go out like fire, and burn that none can quench it, because of the evil of your doings. Now notice he focuses in verse 12, to the house of David. And these rulers, the king here, now Zedekiah was still of the house of David, but God had cut off the house of David with Kaniah or Jeconiah or Jehoiachin, and no rulers after that. But the house of David, God had promised David in 2 Samuel 7 that his kingdom would reign forever and ever and ever. But we know that Christ is a fulfillment of this covenant that God made with him. But we have the house of David, and God's told him this, house of David, you execute judgment in the morning and deliver him that is spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor. God wanted them to have an honest judgment. It was a king's job to judge the people and make decisions. Seemed like Solomon was the most wise of the king, and you know the story about the two women who claimed the same son. But these judgments had to be made, and God wanted them to make honest judgment. And the honest judgment was take them out, the poor men out of the house of the hands of the oppressor. But they wouldn't do this. They wanted to, just like the government today, you know, they do what will benefit them the most. So God's judgment will be upon them because of this, and it won't be quenched because of the evil of their doing. Behold, I am against thee, O inhabitants of the valley, and the rocks of the plains, saith the Lord, who shall come down against us? Or what shall enter into our habitation? It is commonly believed, I'm going to put it that way because I'm not too sure about this, but in most commentaries, I'll put it that way, they agree to the fact that this valley and the rock of the plain had to do with what the king owned. It was his territory, and or even the royalty, I should say, I guess, on that. But I think the thought is this is government property, nobody can touch it. We kind of have that, you know, that idea that I work for the government and I got a job forever, or I'm a postman, and you know, or something like that. But nothing is forever. And even all these things that seem to be established and unmovable, God says, I'm going to come down against it. Who can come down against it? God can. And God can bring anybody he wants to down there. So the answer to these two questions is the Lord does it. Verse 14, and I will punish you according to the fruit of your doing. Now this is an honest judgment, isn't it? And we read this all the way. In the judgment seat of Christ, they'll be judged according to the deeds of the flesh. In the great white throne of my judgment, they'll be judged according to their works. And so according to the fruit of your doing, saith the Lord. And I will kindle a fire in the forest thereof, and it shall devour all things around about it. And if you're one of those trees that you think is steadfast, it'll get you burned up when the forest fire comes. This is a thought, you know. And the fire is coming. God's judgment is coming upon the earth. All right, I guess that finishes chapter 21, and we'll just...